Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. Day 27 of World Cup 2018 is done. Brian Strauss and I will be talking about that as part of our podcast coming to you daily from Russia through July 15th. Just a small request, it would be a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It helps people find us. Onward! Let's bring in Brian Strauss from St. Petersburg, where he covered tonight's France 1, Belgium 0 World Cup semifinal. France is in the final. Brian, how are you? What do you think?
I'm thinking of that Griezmann, you know, the take the L dance that he does.
Yeah.
I took a couple L's tonight.
Okay.
On a professional and personal level, tonight was a grind. And it was for Belgium as well, who I think had their plan and their tactics, used against them, by a very savvy, French tournament tested team this evening. And I got locked into the stadium, which I affectionately call the Schmeichel. And now it is 3:34 in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
We're doing our whatever. What is this? Is this show 30? Have we hit show 30 yet?
I don't know.
Oh, all right.
We might have.
Made it sound like it was a really dumb question.
No. I think we started this on June 12th is when you arrived in Russia, and we've been doing it every day. So yeah, quite likely. Pretty impressive from France to win in a sort of different way again, or maybe similar to the Uruguay game, but certainly not similar to the Argentina game against a Belgium team that they clearly wanted Belgium to create stuff from, you know, wide areas. And I think, I don't have the stats in front of me, but Nasser Chadli, I think, had like a bazillion crosses and completed like one.
France brilliantly locked down the middle of the field with Conte, who's simply the most reliable thing on earth, and Paul Pogba, who had a really, really nice game. He was going toe to toe and head to afro with Fellaini for a good chunk of the night, and did wonderfully. And then they let Chadli and Hazard sort of have the wings. And at the beginning, you're sort of like, "Wow, God, Hazard's getting a lot of the ball. He's really dangerous. He's lively. He's pulling the strings. He's going at people. He's tilting stuff." And then you realize, well, wait, he doesn't cross the ball really ever, and he's not going to score from out there. And Chadli just can't cross, period. So you have a guy who won't cross and a guy who can't cross, and Lukaku's nowhere near the ball. He's getting no service. They've got De Bruyne kind of shadowed. They've got Fellaini erased by Pogba, and there's kind of your game. And it was just a really well executed plan. And again, for this French team, as we've kind of lamented, just kind of, you know, waits for the opening, waits for the chance, waits for the bounce. And they got it with the header from Umtiti, and they're on to the final.
For all the issues you may have had professionally tonight, your story is quite good on SI.com.
I think it is a poop souffle.
Shut up, man. I just read it. I think everyone should
good.
Read it.
All right. Well, it's not good. Not happy with it.
In any case, I think the point you're making in the story is a solid one, which is that Didier Deschamps is sort of frustrating as a coach. And he's frustrating because you feel like he's not maximizing the talent that this French team has, even when they win to get to the World Cup final. And yet, it's very effective.
And he doesn't care. And the point I was trying to make in the story, as they were kicking us out of the media center, so the press conference, Didier Deschamps, look, he's gotten to the World Cup final. He got to the Euro final. It's getting increasingly hard to question at least his results as a coach, and I think that's all he cares about. But he's not. I was kind of hoping that England Belgium would be the World Cup final, only because for me the World Cup final could just be like Gareth Southgate and Roberto Martinez like chatting for 90 minutes.
Lincoln-Douglas debates. Just forget the game
that podcast. They're both, and even tonight. I didn't agree with some of what Martinez said, but he's articulate and opinionated. And I mean, if you threw like a bunch of coaches' press conference platitudes into like a Scrabble bag and just pulled some out at random, that is a Deschamps. Right? He is the most unquotable, uncharismatic. Maybe it's just the translation. And then tonight, it took him a friggin' hour to get in.
Yeah.
And so, and we're talking about a 9 p.m. start, and it was shitty. So I wrote what I thought was a crappy story, because they were like, I was trying to write it like as we were being ushered out of the media center into what isn't even the darkness here. It's just kind of that weird kind of hazy
white nights.
Yeah. The sun is kind of fighting against the horizon. The point I wanted to make was that, we remember champions differently than we assess them during their runs. And that when you look back, and so many people were asking Deschamps in the press conference about the 98 team, five or six questions about the 98 team. And you just realize that people revere this team. And I think they revere it in hindsight. They revere it because they remember Zidane. And I think they remember players who didn't even play that much of a role on that team. And I mentioned Vieira and Henri in the story. But that World Cup, no one thought they were going to beat Brazil in that final. I mean, they didn't light up anything at that World Cup. But of course, in hindsight, 20 years later, they're legends. And so that's the recipe for Deschamps is get the trophy, put the star on your jersey, and then people will remember how wonderful you were. Don't worry about it at the time. He's not trying to impress anyone.
One thing I would also say is, in your story, you mentioned the similarity that the center forward for France, Olivier Giroud, has not scored a goal in this tournament. And you mentioned that Stefan Givarsh, who has one of the greatest random apostrophes in his last name of any player I've ever seen.
We should do a power ranking on that.
Yeah, was the starting forward for France in the 1998 final and didn't score a goal in that tournament. However, I will slightly disagree here. Stefan Givarsh was terrible. He was horrible. I actually think Giroud has been halfway decent in this tournament as a setup guy. And like, Givarsh just did nothing in that tournament.
Okay. I don't disagree. I also think, though, that when you have a team of this kind of talent, when you have a team with this... Giroud slows the team down. Giroud makes the team by definition, because he's a target guy and a hold-up guy and a guy who, and a sort of an advanced sort of link player and a guy who's going to, you know, move center backs around and pull defenders. I mean, that's not the stuff of dynamic attacking, right? And right. So it's just going to slow the team down. And when you look at a team with this kind of talent, you're like, why are we trying to slow this down? Why are we trying to make this more deliberate? Why is this team sitting back like they did against Brazil? They were willing, and I tried to make this point again in the story, is that there are teams that enter a game against a team as celebrated as France, a team as high-powered and as highly touted as France. It's the rare team with that kind of buzz around it and hype and expectation that's willing to go into a game and sit back and counter and let the other team be the one that has possession. Let the other team think they're going to be dictating terms. That takes a level of sort of humility and pragmatism that I think is interesting for a team that's expected to win a World Cup. And so if you're going to, you know, that kind of system, that kind of approach, I guess maybe necessitates a guy like Giroud, and you don't need Giroud to score because, you know, the ball turns over and then he's able to bring guys like Mbappe and Griezmann into the play. But it's still an acceptance and an admission and maybe even a defiant celebration from France that they don't care about looking good. You know, they just don't. They don't care about proving a point. They're just going to go out and try to win the game and do the minimum that they need to do to win the game. They're going to be certainly if Croatia wins. I mean, France is healthy. I mean, France is in, you know, having gone through six games. I mean, they're going to enter the World Cup final, you know, in really, really good shape physically, I think, too.
So we saw some good performances from the goalkeepers tonight. Lloris had a couple of really good saves. So did Courtois. And the difference ends up being on a set piece. Is there some feeling of emptiness or unfulfillment in watching a game of this magnitude in the end be decided by a set piece?
I don't know. I mean, I think the point is that France didn't care, right? I mean, they don't care. I mean, they're not unfulfilled. I mean, I think we would have wanted to have seen. I picked Griezmann to win the Golden Ball. Right. I mean, I picked France to win the World Cup, but I picked Griezmann to win the Golden Ball.
Oh, you picked
so
France
it's clear,
to win.
Not forgot. The Golden Ball, the boot. Boot. Why do I keep the Golden Boot? I picked him to win the Golden Boot. So it's clear that I envisioned France winning the World Cup, but not really like this, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not memorable. It's not something that we're going to say, my God, do you remember the soccer? Do you remember that famous semifinal? But like I said, over time, people will certainly remember Mbappe. People will remember the midfield. But people will remember a few given moments here and there. They'll remember Inspector Pavard. But, you know, people don't remember from the 98 team. They don't remember Zidane's suspension. They don't remember barely beating Paraguay in overtime.
I was at that game. I was in Lons. So I like the fact that Inspector Pavard is now something we just use, and it's not even something we think
it's very,
about.
It's big for you. I know.
You know? It's a good moment. Also,
maybe you can retire. Maybe you know how Chuck Blazer trademarked the smiley face,
right?
Maybe you can get out of this grind by by trademarking Inspector Pavard and blowing up the world with Inspector Pavard merchandise. And I buy an Inspector Pavard scarf.
See,
there were some scarf vendors outside the Church of the Spilled Blood today, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
and there seven or eight like different tables with people selling match scarves and team scarves and World Cup scarves, and it was just the highlight of my entire time here in Russia. It was just awesome.
Nice.
I bought
scarves. So, you know, you're leaving St. Petersburg tomorrow after I think 7 days there. Any moments that you'll remember there, including tonight?
I'm not leaving here tomorrow.
Oh, you're
not leaving here tomorrow. I'm going to be here tomorrow. I couldn't get a train back. All the trains that got back in time for the second game were booked. So it was either I leave tomorrow or today and watch and miss the second semifinal, or stay here, watch the second semifinal here in St. Petersburg, if my hotel gets the channel, which I don't think they do, and then come back Thursday. So that's what I'm going to do.
Well, maybe you could get like the suitcase of John Strong or Stu Holden, because they're coming back to actually broadcast the semifinal.
Well, they probably either are A, better at making plans in advance than I am, or B, I'm gonna go with B here. They have someone do it for them.
As an employee of Fox Sports, I think that is accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm my own travel agent, which probably explains a hell of a lot of stuff that I've talked about over the past month.
Yeah, so how's everything going up there, man? I mean, like, you know, the no credit card, the everything's in cash for you.
I know that I'm sometimes a little crude on this show. And a couple people have like followed up on Twitter asking about the credit card, and I've like had some really like crude I realize that there's a line of stuff that I shouldn't say on the show.
Thank you for at least recognizing this topic
pushes me so uncomfortably close to that line that it's almost hard to talk about. I'd almost rather not. You know, it's like when you go to the store and you see like the Keebler fudge sticks. You're like, oh man, I want those. And you're just like, no, I'm not even going to buy them. I'm like, you're trying to bring them home and ration them is a mistake. You know, you just leave the Hostess ding dongs at the store because it's a lot easier just to do it there than it is to bring them home and try to like be an adult about it. So I'm leaving it at the store. I'm not even going to talk about the credit card. I'm surviving. I've got some cash and I'm going to figure this out. So thank you for your concerns and prayers and all that kind of stuff.
Just the whole metaphor about the like, you know, the fudge sticks or whatever at the grocery store, that never enters my mind.
What doesn't?
The whole fudge stick thing.
So like you don't leave something at the store because you know that if you bring it home, you'll just like wreck it?
No.
Wow. Well, you're a better person than me, man.
I'd like to connect here. I am just trying to understand. Okay. But everything else is okay. Like, we're going to make it to the end of this tournament, aren't we?
Tonight was a close call. Tonight, everything went wrong tonight at the stadium. Also, at the Schmeichel, it's really it's the most of all of the three World Cups I've done. It was the most difficult stadium to access, and so I got lost several times because the signage wasn't very good, and you had to like walk in and out several times to get to and from the stadium and the media seating and the media center. And then we had to do, and then they locked us in. And so I had to find some volunteers who were leaving and get them to take me to get me out. And of course that required like a entire lap of the complex. And the internet is just the internet for whatever reason has been really bad at a lot of these places, which is really disappointing. You would think FIFA, what they spend on the friggin' desk lamps,
right?
How many desk lamps? They bought another 100,000 desk lamps.
Right.
Like, buy a modem from, you know, 2008 for all that money.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
yeah, we're running on fumes, man. And I know nobody wants to listen to the bitching, but I'll tell you what, tonight's game was really good. I really enjoy. As a soccer game, as a game to watch,
right.
I enjoyed it. I sat next to Jonathan Wilson, who writes for us and everybody else.
Really smart guy.
He's incredible. The guy, he was talking to me about like guys from the Argentine 1930 team, like just pulling it out of thin air, pulling it out of thin air in the middle. I was like, oh, look at this player. Look how he's doing this. You know, look how he's running off the defender. And he'd be like, yeah, that's like how Jose from like the 1924 Uruguayan Olympic team did it. What the hell?
They got a star, by the way. Amazing. They got a star, that 24 Olympic team for Uruguay.
Yes. But no, Jonathan Wilson covers soccer. The guy writes like 8 articles a night. Like he covers soccer for, he covers soccer for Highlights Magazine for kids. He covers soccer for the Bible, everything. The guy's an absolute machine. So I sat next to him tonight, and that was very cool. And he's very interesting and intelligent. And I enjoyed the game, and I enjoyed the Schmeichel. And it was just doing the job tonight, which is why we're here. It was really, really hard. And I still think my story was trash.
Okay, I disagree. I do think this game tonight reminded me a little bit of the. Do you remember the Germany Spain semifinal in 2010? It was a 1-0 game, and Puyol got a header.
My favorite game I've ever covered. Yep.
But just such a high level game where you're like, these guys are playing at a higher level than we've seen other games.
Yes, that is well said. Exactly. And we talked about that. I was also you know, Martin Rogers from USA Today was there tonight as well. I saw him briefly, and we were at that game together in Durban in 2010. We were talking, we were essentially having a very similar conversation, just like that was my favorite game of that World Cup. And it was my first World Cup, and sort of to see the game live at a World Cup played at that level by those two teams that night. I don't think either France or Germany, I mean, I think maybe those teams were better than I'm so tired. I'm not complaining. I think Spain and Germany of 2010 were probably better teams than the ones I saw tonight, but maybe not. And like I said, maybe history will judge them differently. I mean, if France, let's say France plays Croatia in the final and wins 4-0, right? And Mbappe scores like a bicycle kick hat trick. Like, no one will remember the rest of this crap. Nobody. Nobody will remember all Didier Deschamps droning on for 40 minutes and about how he wouldn't like pull the brakes off this team. No one will remember. And that's what they still have in front of them. And again, at the same time, if they win, no one remembers. People think of Spain, the Spain 2010 team, as this fluid attacking team that changed the way we think about football. You know, they were passing teams to death and winning games 1-0. You know, right. It's just funny how the World Cup kind of shapes the way we recall and perceive things, and France understands that. Didier Deschamps understands that better than absolutely anyone, and I guess that was what I was trying to say.
I think we're at the point of the podcast, like where we were last night, where we thought it was just the two of us and nobody else was listening. And I got all of these tweets today saying I was listening. So I felt kind of like people were backing us up a little bit.
I think they're fired up about the space borscht.
Yeah.
The Maradona candle cake thing, that was a good story. That keeps the people roped in.
I posted a picture of that today. That worked out well.
How was your show tonight? I hope you had better logistics and technologies than I did this evening.
Tonight's World Cup Tonight show, I talked about the Cristiano Ronaldo move and the details of it and what Real Madrid wants to do next, which is to target Neymar, Mbappe, and Hazard.
Like all of them?
They're not going to sign all three of them. I think Hazard, I think Hazard is fairly likely, but he's not a replacement for Ronaldo. I mean, they need a Galactico-level center forward who's going to score a ton of goals. And so that is either Neymar. That's either Neymar or Mbappe. And like they are on the same team, PSG, which does not want to sell them. But, you know, I actually did some reporting here and was able to report that Real Madrid execs have spoken multiple times recently to Neymar's dad, who's in control of a lot of his stuff. And they want to try and convince Neymar, or if not Neymar, Mbappe, to want to leave. And that way, even if PSG says, we're not selling, like if the player wants to leave, the player tends to leave. That's what happened with Ronaldo.
So, is that like tampering on some level? I mean, is that looked down upon?
I don't know.
Do you think these clubs, and again, as we've said, when people talk about European soccer and all that kind of stuff, they're really talking about like 8 teams, right?
Right.
So like, do you think that on the desks of like the technical directors of Madrid and PSG and Bayern and Barcelona and Man City and Juventus and, you know, throw in your two or three other teams, like they each have a phone that's on their desk, and you know those, how the phones have those speed dial buttons?
Yeah.
It just has the logos of the other 8 teams.
Maybe. I'd love to think that is true.
And they just call each other and like try to make deals and swap players and all that kind of stuff. So you like, you know, you push the PSG button and you try to offload or sign some guy, because they're all at this point, there's only like 7 or 8 teams that can afford these groups of players, right?
Right.
So they're all just going to be shuttling back and forth. So, you know, Buffon goes to PSG and Ronaldo goes to Juventus and Hazard goes from Chelsea to Real Madrid. And it's just this merry-go-round.
One of my favorite moments reporting-wise earlier this year was when I reported that Mino Raiola, who is the super agent for Paul Pogba and many other players, had been contacting during the season top clubs trying to get them to buy Pogba because he was unhappy at Man United. And I had all these Man United fans tell me on Twitter, like, I was an idiot. I was trying to cause problems with their team. And then, like, this was like in the January transfer window. And then Pep Guardiola, in a fit of pique at a Man City press conference, actually says publicly that Mino Raiola was trying to get Man City to buy Paul Pogba. And so I literally had public confirmation from Pep Guardiola that what I reported was true.
So Raiola has one of those phones.
He might.
That's it. I wonder if that's like the old Sports Illustrated sneaker phone.
I am imagining all of this and hoping that's the case.
Except it's the bat phone for, you know, it's the bat phone for, you know, super rich mega football clubs that can buy players. What was I going to say? That's crazy that happened today. We were sitting at the stadium, killing time, waiting for the internet to go out. when this went down, and yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know. Like, is Ronaldo pissed off that he's not in the World Cup, so he decided to like steal some thunder from the semifinal? Like, why couldn't he wait a couple days?
It's absurd, you know, to me that Real Madrid has now twice upstaged the World Cup with the timing, yes, of their announcements. First one was Lopetegui as their coach, like the day before the World Cup starts, causing Lopetegui to get fired as the Spain coach. And then this one, which they could have announced on the previous two off days during the World Cup, and they decide to announce an hour or two before the game tonight that Ronaldo's going to Juventus. And it makes you think that like Real Madrid is going to announce like an hour before the final that, oh yeah, we signed Kylian Mbappe.
I just don't find them very likable.
That's not likable stuff to do.
Nah, I just don't. There's just something about them. When I was a young wannabe at the Washington Post, but when I was a young wannabe at the Washington Post, box scoring and news aiding and page proofing and phone answering and mail retrieving and all that kind of stuff, I was going to go to Spain on a trip, like a backpacking kind of thing that you do when you're young and poor. And I wanted to go to see games. So I wanted to see Madrid and Barcelona. And I had no idea how you got tickets back then, you know, no clue. So I found their addresses on their websites, and I sent just a message in a bottle, shot in the dark email, just to the general address on their website, just saying who I was. I'm on vacation. I'm on holiday. I'm not there to work. I'm not looking for any handouts. I'm not covering anything. I'm just curious. I love soccer, and I want to work in soccer, and I would just love to see a game there. If you could just give me some advice on how to get tickets, I'd be extremely grateful. This was like 2002, so okay, like this was, you were not StubHubbing back then and that kind of stuff. So Madrid did not answer the email. A woman from Barcelona wrote me back, offered me a ticket to a Champions League game against Roma. When I arrived, she gave me a private tour of the stadium, the whole thing, down to the field, the whole deal. She gave me her employee discount at the club shop. She took me to the press conference after the game. And then after they were all done, the PR staff took me out for beer and pizza.
Not that you were looking for any free handouts.
No, I was not. I mean, I did not turn them down. And by the way, 25%. Discount. I don't know if it was 25%, whatever it was. The ticket was free. I sat sort of like in an overflow media area at the Camp Nou and watched Barcelona and Roma in the Champions League. And she did all of this out of the goodness of her heart. And that's always kind of made me it's when you have that contrast, Barcelona, you know, it's kind of lean that way, I think.
Is the Washington Post ethics department going to come after you now that the story has gone public?
Really good question. Really good question. One, I mean, all the people there who I worked for who hated me, are most of them are long gone.
I think the statute of limitations has run out, and you're actually no longer an employee of the Washington Post. But
yeah,
I think that,
like 50-
right. It's an instructive story, though, of the response from one club compared to the other.
Yeah, and I kept, you know, and there really was like, no, like, you can't do this, no, you know, and then like, yes. So I sent her, I forget her name, but she loved basketball and she loved women's soccer. Huh. She loved the fact that women's soccer was so big in the U.S.
Yeah.
And this was during the WSA days, during the Freedom days.
Right.
So when I got back from Spain, I put together a care package for her with like some Washington Wizards gear and a Mia hat, a Mia Hamm shirt and some Washington Freedom like media guides and pins. And I boxed it all up, and that cost like, you know, that cost the price of the ticket to the Barcelona game to ship that monstrosity to back to Barcelona. And I never heard back from her. I don't even know if she ever got it. And you know, 15 years later, I've always wondered what happened to that box of stuff and whatever happened to that woman who was so nice to me.
I am going to decide in my head that she got it and was very happy about it, and good karma will come to you for that effort.
I will take working internet at the World Cup final.
On that note, let's call it a night.
As my receipt of good karma.
Awesome, man. Look forward to seeing you back here in Moscow soon.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. It really does help the cause if you do, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.